Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They'd have everybody throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5, Patriots Playbook. 51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
go
season.
Stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook, kids, for Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving Eve, right here in the United States of America. My name is John Rook. We're glad you're with us yet again on Patriots.com radio, and I hope that it is a happy Thanksgiving wherever you may be listening to us today. Those of you that are not aware, obviously we'll take Thanksgiving Day off. And then on Friday, Patriots Friday, with Mike Felger, fills in the time slot, as it normally does here on Patriots.com radio. So we'll actually be back with you next Tuesday following the Eagles game. So today, we got several things to accomplish. Even though we don't normally do this on Wednesdays because we don't have another show for this week, I want you to send me your score predictions for Sunday night's game against the Eagles. Now, we normally save this for the end of the week, but, you know, number one, this is the end of our week. Number two, because there's been so much talked about over the last 24 hours, I think, about the point spread. Whereas, you know, it's around 18 or so with McNabb. It's going to be 22 to 23 points or more without McNabb and could approach the all-time NFL record for point spread in a single game. And, of course, I think we all realize that there are a couple of games at least left on the schedule that could, in fact, approach the all-time NFL record for point spread in a game. And so I'd like to know whether or not you think the Patriots can approach that this week. Quite simple. How confident are you in this Patriots team to take care of business and move from 10-0 to 11-0 and then turn their attention to the following week in a Monday night game against Baltimore? So send me your score predictions, webradio at patriots.com. That's where you get it. The other thing that I want to talk about today is really what Fred and the guys were talking about right at the end of PFW today, and that is the teams that you loved to hate when you were growing up and why you hated them. And it's only because I think we all realize, as I mentioned, and as we were talking about a little bit ago with the guys, that you know, the Patriots are one of those teams now for a lot of for a lot of fans around the country. Maybe even for a lot of young kids growing up in other cities that have NFL teams that have been recently blown out by the Patriots. Maybe a child, misdirected as they may be, is a Washington Redskins fan or a Colts fan or whatever. You know, they're looking at the Patriots now like I used to look at my hated team, which was the Boston Celtics growing up. And, you know, even when I was growing up, there wasn't really an NBA team in the state of Texas. You know, they had the Houston Rockets early. They had the Spurs of the ABA back then. They did not have the Dallas Mavericks pre-1980. So, you know, I guess it was just because I was a big fan. Frankly, I was a big fan of the Milwaukee Bucks the first couple of years that they had, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was then Lou Alcindor. Big fan of the Milwaukee Bucks, and Boston crushed them for the most part. And so I kind of just developed this habit because my team that I like to follow got whacked. And so it's one of those things that, you know, certainly I follow the Celtics now, and my kids who have grown up here in the Northeast now are, you know, they consider themselves, you know, fans of all of the Boston and New England teams, and the Celtics are certainly one of those. And in fact, I've got tickets to go see the Celtics play tonight up at the Garden, which is a great thing. But, you know, and I'm going to go and I'm going to enjoy it. But I have never had the passion or the love, shall I say, for that particular team, just because old habits are hard to die. And so I'm wondering now if you, you know, understand why some fans around the country are now growing up or moving on in their lives thinking, wow, I hate those Patriots. And here's why. So I want you to exercise, you know, your own sports memory bank just a little bit. And I want you to send me a note today to tell me what's the team that you grew up hating and why you grew up hating them. Webradio at patriots.com. That's how you get us. Webradio at patriots.com. Coming up with the program, we're going to give you a chance to hear from Bill Belichick earlier today at Gillette. And on Patriots Monday, you did not, unfortunately, get a chance to hear from Tom Brady because he was unavailable to join Dennis and Callahan on WEEI. But today, you will hear Tom Brady in case you weren't streaming and you didn't get it yesterday when he appeared with them on EEI. We've got it for you here on our program today, here in the playbook. And that will come up during hour number two of the program today. So Belichick and Brady in the second hour of the program. It's you and I, kids, here in opening hour number one for Wednesday on the day before Thanksgiving. Some news to take care of. Randy Moss, as I'm sure you're probably aware now, named the AFC Player of the Week for Week 11. 10 passes, 128 yards, the four touchdowns. In the 56-10 win over Buffalo this past Sunday night, leads the team. He's gone over 1,000 yards in receptions now. Let's see. In fact, he did it with a 5-yard reception, 2:27 left in the second quarter. He passed the 1,000-yard mark for the season, so he's the first Patriots player to record 1,000 yards or more receiving since Troy Brown did it with 1,199 back in the 2001 season. His 1,000-yard season is now the 10th 1,000-yard receiving season in Patriots history. And he is there with Brown, Terry Glenn, who did it twice, Ben Coates, Stanley Morgan, who did it three times, Irving Fryer, and Harold Jackson as the only players in team history to reach 1,000 yards for a year. Morgan, by the way, the single-season record is 1,491 yards. He did that back in 86. So I'd have to say, based on what we've seen thus far, and with six games still left to play, that record's a bit in jeopardy, I would think. The 1,000-yard season for Moss, by the way, is the eighth in his 10-year career. It's his first since 05. He had just clipped it. I think he had like 1,005 or something with the Oakland Raiders a couple of years ago. But so it's the eighth in 10 years. That just gives you a bit of an idea of the phenomenal career that a guy like Randy Moss has had. And he is continuing that career with the Patriots. And as we've talked about, and I'm sure as we have enjoyed many, many times. So that's the latest with Moss and his deal. And, of course, he is really just maybe three or four games away from eclipsing Stanley Morgan's record. We'll, of course, continue to follow that for you. So Moss been named the Player of the Week. Can't say that that really surprises me, surprises probably too many people. Yesterday I spent some time talking about some of the negative things and how some of the other negative press continues to come out about this football team. And we I think we spent a little bit of time yesterday kind of saying, you know what, I'm getting kind of tired of it. It's old, it's cliche, it's tried, it's worn out. Nobody's come up with a new reason. You know, it's just pure like, all right, let's just hate on the Patriots for the sake of hating on them. Well, I wanted to try to balance that out just a little bit today because there are actually some folks and some highly respected folks who cover professional football who, believe it or not, think that what the Patriots are doing right now is good. And not just good for the NFL, but good for football. See, now, I've always thought that having a team up at the top, a real heavyweight, a team that dominates, a dynasty, if you will. I've always thought that's good for any sport. Why? Well, because it galvanizes the fandom. You know, there are a ton of people that follow them just for the sake of following a winner. We got a lot of front-running, you know, climb on the bandwagon fans that will root for a team just because they win and they want to be associated with a winner. The other end of that spectrum is, of course, as I just suggested, with, you know, teams that I grew up with that I hated because they win all the time, it's kind of like, well, leave some for something, somebody else. And you hate a team because they win all the time. So it's a galvanizing thing, but it creates interest. So if you have a dynastic team in your league, whatever your sport of choice is, generally speaking, it's a good thing because it creates buzz. It creates interest. Fans either love you or hate you. There's no fence sitting. And when there's fence sitting, there's apathy. And when there's apathy, there's not people in the stands. There's not people watching or listening or talking about it. So this is good for the National Football League, whether the NFL believes it or not. And to further my point, no less an authority than Vic Carucci of NFL.com, who we've had on this program several times before in the past few years, who made his trade in the National Football League, covering the Buffalo Bills for the Buffalo News, and then he worked for several websites, and now he's the senior editor for NFL.com. Let me just read you a little bit of an excerpt of what he had on the website in his column for this week, if you haven't had a chance to surf on over there and see it. He says, "Someone recently asked if I thought New England's dominance was bad for the NFL. Questioner said it was, pointing out that the likelihood of the Patriots cruising to a fourth Super Bowl crown left fans of 31 teams with nothing to look forward to between now and February." Well, Vic Carucci says, "I disagree. Here are five reasons why the Pats' otherworldly performance is a very good thing for the league." And feel free, by the way, when you send me your email and your score prediction and the teams you love to hate growing up, feel free to sound off on this particular subject, whether or not you agree or disagree with Vic, because I think it's nail-on-the-head stuff here. He says, number one, "As football fans, we all appreciate the chance to witness history in the making. Patriots look as if they will indeed go 19-0, and that's something a lot of us are going to say, even if to ourselves, we were happy to have seen in our lifetime." And he goes on to explain how he had no real special rooting interest in the 72 Dolphins, but he remembers loving to have the chance to watch that perfect season as a young fan. "I am the same way. I actually rooted a bit for the Dolphins back in 72 because I just wanted to see them do it, even though it was at the expense of my beloved Dallas Cowboys at the time." All right, Krucci says, number two, "As football fans, we appreciate seeing the game played exceptionally well. The mere fact there's a legitimate comparison to be made between Tom Brady and the greatest quarterbacks in the game's history is by itself remarkable. How often have you heard others provide vivid descriptions about Johnny Unitas or Joe Montana, Dan Marino, John Elway, and regret not being around or being too young to yourself to have watched what all the fuss was about? Brady's providing that chance for a new generation of fans." That's reason number two, why the Pats' dominance is good for the league. Number three, "As football fans, you need a team you love to hate almost as much as you need one you love to love." That's absolutely 110%. And that's really my number one reason, as I just mentioned to you. It's good for the league because you've got just as many people perhaps hating them as you have loving them because they win all the time. So when you say New England Patriots, it automatically brings emotion in a positive or negative sense. There's no ambivalence there. And that's what you need. You need passion to sustain a sport and to take it to new levels. And at the very least, the Patriots are bringing passion. Let's face it. On both sides, right? Reason number four, "As a fan of another AFC team, you're right to feel discouraged about your chances of seeing your team reach the Super Bowl, but you're still going to root for your club's chances to reach the playoffs. And if football history has taught us anything, something crazy can always happen in the postseason." You know, our friend Russell Baxter here says the reason that he likes football is because it's an oblong shape, and when it bounces crazily. You never know where it's going to go. And that's very true in the postseason. And I said this on yesterday's program as well. The postseason just magnifies everything, you know, 10 times plus. And so guys play tighter. They don't play loose. They don't play free and easy. They play with pressure piled upon their shoulders. And so if the Patriots go and make a couple of mistakes and they give somebody a crack in the doorway, a good team could bust that door wide open. We all know that the Colts are still capable of beating the Patriots. And if the Patriots go out and throw up a stinker and turn the ball over, you know the Colts are definitely capable. So Vic says, regardless of what the Patriots do through the balance of the regular season, they still have to play a minimum of two extra games for a chance to win it all. That's right on. It's right on. And then number five, the fifth and final reason why the Patriots' dominance right now is good for the NFL. "As a fan of an NFC team, you're feeling that there's no unstoppable force to prevent your team from reaching the Super Bowl." Although I guess the Cowboys or Packers could have us rethinking that. And he says, "You know you want your crack at the Patriots on the biggest stage of them all." Absolutely. Again, it's only one game, it's one shot, and when it's one shot for all the marbles, anything goes. I mean, if you played 10 times, would the Patriots win 8 times, 9 times? Probably. Could they win 10 times? Well, that's what we don't know. It's the one shot you don't know about, and that's all you need in a playoff game and or the Super Bowl. One shot. So no matter how dominant you look, you have that shot. And so I kind of wanted to bring that out to the table today simply because, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about everybody hating and hammering on the Patriots. But, you know, hey, I respect Vic's opinion immensely. I think he's one of the best football writers out there. And if you've read him at all over the years, I would think that you would agree, although everybody's entitled to their own opinion on that. But I did want to point that out, that there are some now that believe what the Patriots are doing is actually pretty good for the game. And that it's not necessarily a bad thing to have the Patriots beating up on people. Let me give you one more quick example. I mean, John Madden, here's another one. John Madden said, you know, the other night on Sunday Night Football that, quote, it's the best offense I've ever seen.
Kick out. Boom, right there.
Yeah. And he said the other night, Tom Brady is playing the position of quarterback right now better than I've ever seen anyone play it in my history.
And when he can take your center and just blow him.
Yeah, that's good. But it's true. I mean, when you consider all the quarterbacks that he's seen play, putting Brady up there at the top of the list is fairly significant. Fairly significant. One other one from a Pennsylvania writer. It's a gentleman, actually covers the Eagles for the Philadelphia Bulletin, which is a locally owned family paper in suburban Philadelphia. Seth Goldstein is the guy's name. And he wrote in an edition this week that, yes, the Patriots should run up the score in their games. And he brings to light what I was talking about yesterday. This is professional football. It's not high school football. It's not Pop Warner football. It's not Pee Wee football. It's the National Football League. If teams like the Bills give up 56 points to the Pats like they did on Sunday night, it's Buffalo's fault for allowing New England to march down the field drive after drive. It's not a matter of the Patriots exhibiting bad sportsmanship. If the Patriots have the personnel to consistently put up 30, 40, and 50-point performances week after week, shame on defenses for not preparing adequately enough. I mean, isn't that what we have been saying here? Seth goes on to say, yes, there are those that say the Pats season has been tainted by Spygate. New England cheated. They got caught. They were punished, although I think it should have been harsher. But the truth is this. The tape the Patriots had of the Jets' defensive signals has nothing to do with the 49 they put up on the Dolphins, the 52 they hung on the Redskins, or the 56 they had against the Bills. It had nothing to do with Tom Brady's 38 touchdown passes now, 4 picks, quarterback rating of over 130. It had nothing to do with Randy Moss's over 1,000 yards receiving and 16 touchdowns. It has nothing to do with the fact that 13 different players have scored touchdowns this season. Or is that 14 now? But this is his article from last week. So he's absolutely correct. And he finally says, and for all those that say the Patriots should ease up on their opponents in the second half, remember that this is the NFL. If you want them to go easy on you in the second half because they put up 28 points on you in the first quarter, then don't play professional football. The Patriots are on a mission, official or not, to cream every team they play, and with this being the pros, they are more than welcome to go for it. And then he says, watch out, Eagles. Good stuff. Absolute good stuff. He's right on. So see, there's even somebody who covers it, you know, for the opposition, Seth Goldstein, for the Philadelphia Bulletin, who says, you know what, there's nothing wrong with what the Patriots are doing. So because we spent a lot of time, you know, talking about people hating on the Patriots, I wanted to bring those two pieces out to you today simply because, number one, in reading them earlier today, I found it striking. Number two, it's really a minority opinion. I think you and I realize that. It's still a minority opinion. There's still the overwhelming majority, I think, of media and fans would like to see the Patriots get popped. I happen to believe, though, that there is a growing number of fans, if not media, but fans certainly, who would like to continue to see the Patriots do well for the aforementioned reasons of this could be history in the making. There's a whole generation of football fans out there that don't remember what the 1972 Dolphins did. They don't remember anything about the team, only that a bunch of old men get together once a year to pop some champagne corks and celebrate something that happened 35 years ago. That's all they know about the 72 Dolphins. So now if the Patriots can match that and or beat that, they have their own dynasty, their own greatest team of all time to hang a hat on and say, wow, I was around when I saw the 2007 Patriots. They were unbelievable. Can't believe that there was a team better than that. And so the cycle begins all over again. The thought process begins all over again. And you bring in a whole new, you know, legion of fans, and you create new fans that either love you or hate you. And like I said, if you're a little kid and, you know, your team keeps getting popped by the Patriots like my teams kept getting popped by the Celtics, you know, back in the 1960s and 70s, well, then the Patriots will end up being your Boston Celtic, your Waterloo, your team that you just grew up loving to hate for no better reason other than the fact that they always won. And the Patriots could end up being that team for you. That in and of itself is just perfect proof that, you know, hey, life rolls on. And there's nothing wrong with what's going on with it. No doubt about that. Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. And I'd love your thoughts again on some of the love the Pats are getting. Your score predictions for Sunday night against the Eagles. And the team that you grew up loving to hate and why you hated them. All right, that gives us some good cannon fodder for today, right? So good stuff to go with, I hope, at any rate. So send on those emails as quick as you can because we'll be getting in the second hour of the program, be getting into Coach Belichick and Tom Brady. So we want to make sure that we have plenty of time to get your thoughts in. This one comes from Dave, who's in Winnipeg, Manitoba. He says, hello, if the Patriots go 16-0, there should be an asterisk beside Miami's name. The reason for the asterisk is because they will have won 14 games as opposed to the Patriots' 16 games. Well, yes, because it was a 14-game regular season back in 72. Yes, I understand that. However, they did go undefeated, and they did win all of the games that were on their schedule they were supposed to play. So I don't believe in asterisks, okay? Don't believe it at all. I mean, if you do it, you do it. If you don't do it, you don't do it. End of discussion. That's why the whole thing about, you know, should we put asterisks, you know, over the last, whatever it is, 10, 20 years in baseball because of this being the steroid era? No. I think, you know, the history books will reflect that this was an era in which guys, you know, some of them, not all of them, but some of them certainly would have enhanced themselves chemically. And I do think that, you know, our history books and our historians and our memories have a good way of sorting everything out. But you just can't make a judgment right now. You have to let time pass. You have to let the story settle. And whatever sticks, whatever you remember is pretty accurate. So I don't believe in putting the asterisk there. I believe in letting history just kind of settle things. And I think history usually does. I really believe that. Let's see what else we have here. This one came from earlier to the PFW guys. Randall Gay's comments show, this from Jamie, says show that he's a better Nickelback than public speaker, as he didn't say what I'm pretty sure he meant. I think he was calling out the defensive players who were complaining about the Patriots playing hard for a full 60 minutes in a blowout because that indicates that the complainers didn't feel like playing hard at that point themselves. In other words, it's disrespectful to pick up your check if you didn't give it your all during the whole game. Not if you did play hard but got blown out. Or as Emmett says, blowed out anyway. Thank you, Jamie. Let's see. What else do we have here? We also have, okay, this one comes from Dave in Virginia, who says, I know the Patriots won't look forward, but we can. Said, number one, against who will the Patriots beat by the most points? Number two, what will be the first shutout game, since it's now the defense's time to shine? And number three, will they break the scoreboard? In other words, what will be their highest total? You know what? I think all three of those things could come against the Jets. I'm thinking about 63 to zip. That's, you know, I don't seem to I mean, they'll be, I think, sufficiently motivated on that one, Dave, to answer your question, to be quite honest with you. I think they've got a good chance for any one of those, if not all three of those, all against the Jets coming up. Glenn in Calgary, Alberta, assuming that the Patriots have a top four pick, what position do you see the team addressing? What is the most urgent need? We talked a little about this yesterday, Glenn. I'm still thinking that they'll probably look to defense. I'm still thinking they'll probably look young, and I'm still thinking they'll probably go linebacker. Now, if they don't feel like – if they have a top four pick and they don't feel like the guy that they like is of the value of one of the top picks in the draft, then they're going to trade down. So if they trade down beforehand – you know, maybe for, you know, an extra pick in another year and still, you know, get like a pick around 18 to 25 or whatever, then they feel like, you know, the value of that player is such that you can get him there, number one. And number two, they're going to end up picking up something extra in addition to that, you know, for that top pick. So I think that that's one area they'll look. I personally believe, and I said this yesterday, I'm not convinced that Lawrence Maroney is a durable back based on what we've seen now in a season and a half from him. I'm not convinced he can be a number one, you know, 20 carry a game guy. I think he's too fragile for whatever reason. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he can, you know, turn into another Marion Barber like his former, you know, teammate at the University of Minnesota, because certainly Barber has blossomed into a better back as a pro for the Cowboys than he was at Minnesota. But I'm just not convinced yet. And until I am convinced, yeah, until I am convinced, I think the Patriots have a need there. I'd like to see them kick that, keep that top four pick, or as you say, Glenn, and go get a guy like Darren McFadden from Arkansas. Because not only does he seem to have the strength and the ability to go between the tackles, but he's got unbelievable speed in the open field. Now, Maroney gets through a hole when he can get through it. He gets through it pretty quickly. McFadden leaves him in his dust. That's how good Darren McFadden is. I don't think that will happen. I really don't. I really think the Patriots would have to be odds on favorites right now to trade down, because the guy that they probably value could be available in the latter stages of the first round, would be my guess. But you never know. Maybe they decide a guy like Jim Laurinaitis from you know, the linebacker from Ohio State is worth a top four or five pick, and if they're there, maybe that's the guy they go after, because I think, as we all know, they do need to get a little bit younger in the linebacking core. So anyway, that's my thought there, and I appreciate you sending the email. John in Fayetteville, Georgia says, Patriots 42, Eagles 13. Westbrook runs one in, Brady to Moss for three touchdowns. Boy, that keeps, that'd give him 19s. That'd put him right on the precipice of, you know, the next game or two beating Jerry Rice's record, huh? He says Maroney runs his second in, and Brady to Welker one touchdown, and Brady to Stallworth for another. So John is really going out on a limb. Must have all those guys on his fantasy team, huh? By the way, that's another thing, because Jerry Rice got his 22 touchdowns, I believe, in what was it, 14 games? 12 games? 14 games? Something like that. So, yeah, for Moss, you know, it's still going to be a record. Again, no asterisk here, guys. You know, it's a single season. And so it looks like he's, you know, he's got a great shot at breaking it now. And again, before the year started, I was on record right here on this program as saying I didn't think Moss would get it, because, you know, the Patriots like to spread things out, and, you know, Brady likes to get things around to different guys, and the Patriots' cast system wouldn't allow them to favor one person over another for whatever reason. And obviously, you know, it's not over yet, and he still doesn't have the record yet, but the way things are going, it looks pretty good. He's got a good shot at it. I'm as surprised as any of you are about that. He still doesn't have it yet, but when he gets it, I think it will be even more extraordinary in the fact that it's coming in this system of sharing the ball. So, you know, he could inch a little bit closer to that this week. So, John, thank you for the prediction. Andy in Vermont says, John, I was wondering if you got my trivia question yesterday. Let's see. Name the only special teams player to win a league MVP. Name the defense to give up only 129 points in a 14-game season. Well, you know what? You got me at a severe disadvantage on that one. I usually don't read trivia questions, Andy, because quite frankly, I don't have a chance to sit and think about them since I got a show to conduct here. So I'll let you send me the answer, and we'll go from there, and I'll give you full credit for it. He says, I guess I offended one of the PFW guys, but I missed some of the show. I'm not a selective listener, sorry. Happy Thanksgiving. I forgot to say that earlier to you and to all of Patriots Nation and to all football fans alike. He says, I hate the Yankees because I was born into the Red Sox nation and from an early age learned the Yankees were the bad guys and pinstripes are ugly. But I got to say the Jets are a close second. Any team from New York will work. And he says his prediction for Sunday will be Pats and Eagles. Pats win by at least 21. All right, Andy, so you answered all the questions. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, I can understand it if you're growing up in New England. I can certainly understand your hating the Yankees. You just before you can say Red Sox, you say, you know, Yankees bleep, right? So, I mean, that's just the way it works. That's just a rite of passage here in New England. I can't tell you how many fathers I know who grew up Red Sox fans who teach that to their kids. It's just the way it is. You know, it's all in, you know, usually in good-natured fun, but it's just the way it is. And I'm sure Yankee fans feel the same way about Red Sox fans, you know, because of the whole rivalry thing between the cities and the regions and everything else. So, anyway, that's good. Good stuff. Appreciate that.
To any Steelers fans listening, you all suck. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up again, by the way. Thank you for that, Jason. Let's go. Let's see. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. Let's see. Got a couple more coming in here. This one says, here we go. Bob from East Boston. He says, John, my most hated team used to be the Montreal Canadiens. They were public enemy number one back in the early to mid-70s to all of us kids who grew up as fans of the Big Bad Bruins. Hard to imagine, but Boston was much more of a hockey town back then than it is today. Bob says, happy Thanksgiving to one and all. Same to you, Bob, and to yours. You know, that's a good one. In fact, when I first figured out that I was coming up to New England and specifically to cover sports in the Boston area back in the late 80s, that's the first thing I thought of. First of all, I said, well, you know, obviously the Red Sox had just come off of that, you know, excruciating 1986 World Series, you know, with the Mets. But number two, it's like, Boston's a hockey town. That's exactly what I thought of. Boston's a hockey town because of the Bruins' influence. And I thought that the Red Sox were probably second, and the Patriots were so far off of the radar screen, it's not even funny. It wasn't even close. And it's amazing to see how things have kind of morphed over the last 20, now 21 years, where Boston certainly is a Red Sox town, but, you know, if the Red Sox are one, the Patriots are 1A. You know, and certainly the Celtics are making a comeback, and the Bruins, God love them, got a long way to go where it's concerned. But, yeah, I could see that where, you know, you're probably my age, maybe a little younger, but at least my age, Bob, if the hated team in your, you know, youth was the Montreal Canadiens. I certainly would remember that from the 1970s, without a doubt. Good one. Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut says, John, would it make sense for the Patriots to go after running back Lamont Jordan? If the Raiders released him today, then go after a top linebacker in the draft. Well, perhaps, especially if they determine that a guy like Kevin Faulk may be on the shelf for a little bit longer. Frankly, Diana, I think that the Patriots are very happy with what they have right now, even without Sammy Morris. Number one, I think they love Sammy Morris. I think they feel like they got a real steal in Sammy, and it's a shame that he got hurt and had to be put on the IR, because I think that they believe that he's a guy that could grow into a potential one, if not 1A role. He was already 1A with Maroney, and you could certainly make it a case for being one with Maroney 1A this year before he got hurt. And so I think the Patriots love him, and I really don't think that they you know, if he can come back healthy for next year, I don't know that this is why I think the whole Darren McFadden thing really is a pipe dream. I'd love to see him do it. I don't think they will, because I think they like Sammy Morris a lot. And they feel like a combination of Morris and Maroney, or Maroney and Morris, take your pick, with Faulk as the change of pace back, is a potent enough offensive backfield where they can spend their time and their energies and their draft picks on other players. I believe that. Now, if Faulk is deemed to be gone for any extended period of time, and although I know he was in the locker room and he has said that you know, he hopes to play this week and whatnot, if Faulk is deemed to be out for any length of time, then maybe you go and look at somebody like that to bring him in. But I'm still thinking, you know, I don't know. You know, the way that Echol and Evans ran last week, and again, I realize it was against Buffalo and it was in a rout, but Buffalo still couldn't tackle him. And I think they like having tough guys that could get yards between the tackles like those two guys. It's nothing flashy. It's 2, 3, maybe if you're lucky, 4 yards, you know, and an AstroTurf burn. But frankly, I think they like that. And so because they still have Echol and they have Evans, who can go both ways as a fullback and a tailback, I don't think that they'll waste anything. I mean, if a guy like Jordan is cut loose and the Patriots could get him for nothing, and they realize they're going to be without Falk for any extended period of time, then maybe you'll see it happen. But I don't think so. I don't think so. I still think that they'll go after a linebacker first and foremost in the draft. I think that'll be their number one choice. I think we all realize that that's what the Patriots have done really since day one of the Belichick regime, is they are looking primarily at defensive players and try to build from the defense. That's the biggest thing. Let's see what else we have here. We have this one. We're also going to let you hear from Andy Reid coming up in a couple of moments, because his conference call has been completed with members of the Patriots media. And because Andy Reid has been such a, he's really been an unbelievable focal point in all the negative ways that you can think of for the Eagles and their fans, because of all of his familial problems this year with his two sons getting into drug trouble and everything else. The fact that, you know, he uses football now to kind of keep his sanity, I think is a good story, and it adds some human interest to it. And Andy Reid, even though you might not want the Eagles to win, I think he might be an individual you could kind of root for based on what I've read. Now, maybe you think differently. Maybe you think that, he didn't obviously have much guidance over his kids or what have you, and he's getting what he deserves and his kids are getting what they deserve. But quite frankly, you know, you teach kids the difference between right and wrong, and you know this if you're a parent. You teach kids the difference between right and wrong, and then at some point in time, you have to let them go, and you have to hope that they do right. And sometimes they don't. And when they don't, then they need to be adults, and they need to stand up for what they did, and they need to accept the consequences. It's that simple. You can't put a leash or a collar around your kids forever. And based on what I've read, I think that's what's happened here. You know, the whole, you know, his home being a drug emporium thing, I'm like, wow, that's harsh. That's real harsh. And so he's kind of climbed into a hole and retreated into football because it's the only solace he can find in his life. And I truly have some empathy for the man. I really do. So because his off-field troubles have been such a focal point this year, and certainly the Eagles were preseason favorite in the division, that notwithstanding, and they've kind of struggled as well, even though they're 5-5 coming in on Sunday, we're going to play Andy Reid's conference call for you here in just a couple of moments. In the meantime, Stefan from Minneapolis writes, he says, as far as running up the score goes, Patriots need to continue obliterating opponents, not for revenge or to show up the rest of the league. Rather, it could affect the outcome of the season. It is an incredibly long shot, but in playoff seeding, the case of a tie, point differential is one of the tiebreakers. I find it interesting that some people are so upset about this issue when it is, in fact, a part of the game and its rules. Well, that's true. But there's nobody who's going to come close to them, Stefan. And I think that's what everybody is kind of up in arms about if they're looking at this in a negative sense. Fact is, they're obliterating people. But you're right. You're absolutely right. If it did come down to a tiebreaker, then, hey, point differential is certainly well in their favor. They're number one in the NFL in scoring and they're number three in scoring defense right now through 10 weeks. So that's a pretty big differential. 411 points scored, 159 given up. 41.1 to 15.9 every game. See, even I can do that math. Stefan says, I can't wait for the Jets game. First 100-point game by an NFL team. Pats will have 75 points by the end of the first half. Oh, goodness. I don't know about that, but I get your point, Stefan. Thank you. Appreciate that. Still time for you. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Predict your score for Sunday night's game with the Eagles. That's number one. Number two, what was the team that you loved to hate when you were growing up as a younger sports fan, and tell me why you hated them, kind of like the Patriots getting hated on by so many around the country right now. Those are the couple of the items that we have on the agenda, and that's what I hope that you'll take the time to send me an email on today. In the meantime, let's head back down to Gillette Stadium and members of the Patriots media visiting earlier on conference call with Philadelphia Eagles head coach Andy Reid.
Hi, Andy.
How are we doing?
Good. How are you doing? What's the
difference
in your team from the Super Bowl meeting with the Patriots? What are the big differences?
Oh, you know, at this point, it's probably wins and losses. All the way through the Super Bowl run there, and sure we're just starting to get healthy, and that's a good thing from our end.
You know, you look at the Patriots from that point. They were good, and as you saw that day in Jacksonville, they were very good. But at the same time, they've got better. What's your view of them and where their strengths lie?
I think the obvious obvious improvement was at the wide receiver position, and they've added a couple linebackers, veteran linebackers in there. And Bill and Scott have done a great job of putting that thing together, and obviously have a good owner to be able to do that, and Mr. Kraft's a heck of an owner.
Right.
And Andy, what's the mindset of a coach when you play a team as good as the Patriots? Is it a personal challenge? Is it like throwing your hands up? Oh my God, what am I going to do with this? Are you excited about it? How does a coach react to that?
To play in New England?
Yeah, to play a team that's undefeated, that's 10-0. What is a coach's mindset going into that for preparation?
Every week, I take it as a privilege to play against anybody in the National Football League and a coach in the National Football League. So this is no different. Very seldom, however, do you get to play against a team that's 10-0. I mean, that's and very well deserving of that. So, I think the thing you find that's universal with the players in the National Football League is they like to compete, and I think the coaches like to compete. So, you've got to worry. There's no time to. You got to spend so much time getting yourselves prepared to play each week that you can't get caught up in all the other stuff.
But does it stimulate you intellectually to be able to mastermind a scheme against a team that's 10-0?
We try to do that every week. That's what we try to do, and they're doing it very well, and so it presents you a great challenge, and look forward to that.
Andy, the Tuesday prior to that Super Bowl, your owner Jeffrey Lurie was talking about kind of picking up a lot of the things the Patriots had done to organizationally. And to have success with it. Do you still maintain that kind of blueprint?
Well, Jeff Lurie is a phenomenal owner. I'm very fortunate to work for him. And, I'm partial. I think he's the best in the National Football League. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly what he said back then. We've kind of tried to do it our way and be a model of it that way, and I'm not sure we've patterned it after anybody else necessarily. We just tried to do what we do best and stick with that and work real hard.
One of the constants, of course, since that game is Brady. He's played unbelievable. Can you touch on his performance and his rise as a one of the great players in this league?
I have a lot of respect for Tom. He's playing as well as any quarterback playing right now. I think Brett Favre's probably up there, and Peyton's up there too, and they're having a lot of success right now. So they're doing a. Tom's playing as good football as anybody's played though right now, and it's a tribute to him because he works so stinking hard at it. And it's not something that he didn't rest on his laurels at all. He continues to try to get better every year.
How much better is he now than he was in that Super Bowl game?
I think he's obviously better just with experience, but I also think he has better people around him to throw to, and so that's that raises your game just even another notch.
Yeah, you've got a guy on your team that constantly performs at a high level, and he's the leading all-purpose rusher, catcher, whatever he is Westbrook. He's been a terrific player for you, high or low. He's always been a guy you can count on, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's a real smart guy. Real good football player. You can do a lot of things with him, move him around. I'd say likewise. He's had a good quarterback to work with over the years here. Even though Donovan's been banged up just a little bit, I've always kept Donovan right in that same category that I kept those other guys in. Healthy and that's those two play off of each other. They really work well together.
Andy, do you think that Brian Westbrook is a little bit underrated? I mean, when people list, you know, the elite backs in the league, they don't list Brian too often.
I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I just have a hard time believing that anybody's doing it better at that position right now than what Brian's doing. I think he's just playing great football. And I'm saying from picking up blitzes to running the football, from catching the football, I have a hard time believing anybody's doing it better than he is right now.
What kind of a challenge is it for your secondary to match up with this receiving core?
That's a heck of a challenge. You know, that's there's some really good receivers there. Well, I'm stating the obvious, but and they've got a good quarterback to throw to them. So, you know, keep yourself very close to those receivers, or they're gonna gas you.
Do you see any similarity in terms of the impact that Moss has had here with the impact that Terrell Owens had when you brought him in that first year?
I would say that the thing that's similar is, you know, Tom feels like he can put the ball up, and he might be throwing into coverage a little bit, but he trusts that Randy's going to make the play, and that's how Donovan felt with Tio.
How much does that allow you to expand your offense, or how much easier does that make it to craft a game plan when you know you can go to that well?
Yeah, everything's not going to be perfect the way you draw it up. So if you have a guy that you can trust, and defense, you know, the defense is, they're trying to stop you. So they might have one or two guys on your primary receivers and playing good coverage. And if you know that, if you have that trust that you can throw the football up there and he can make a play on it, I mean, that helps you as a quarterback.
Does that help the whole mental outlook of the team, knowing that you brought in a weapon like that?
I think it does. I think it does. I think it's a positive.
Andy, is this Patriots offense now? I mean, is this the best offense that you've ever seen?
You know, I got asked that in my press conference here, and I have a hard, you know, I haven't thought about it much, but I have a hard time, as I think of it, thinking of anybody that's done it better for 10 games than what the Patriots have done right now. So, yes, you know, everything seems a little more poignant when you're sitting here having to play them and they're doing it at the present. But there have been some good offenses before, but they're doing it very well right now.
Andy, knowing that the Patriots were on your schedule, when you saw them trade for Moss, did you think about what a Brady to Moss combo would be, or did you figure to worry about that when November rolled around?
I thought it was a great move. I stay in touch with Bill, and I know when I talked to him just after he did it, and I thought it was a smart move. I think Randy and Tom, where Tom is in his career, he and Randy would get along great, and that's what's happened. And they've got a nice little thing going right now.
Andy, from what you've seen on film of the Patriots, why haven't opposing teams been able to put a lot of pressure on Tom Brady?
Got a pretty good offensive line, and then they'll if they need to hold extra people in, they hold extra people in for protection purposes. But that offensive line, you know, I think they do a heck of a job. Dante Scarnecchi is one of the best in the business at what he does, teaching, and then he has some good players there.
Do you see any way that you can beat the Patriots unless you put pressure on him, and lots of pressure?
Well, you know, you have to be able to put the pressure on him. I think that's probably, you know, most quarterbacks in this league, if you're playing a 7-on-7 game, they're going to win. So somehow you've got to find a way to put pressure on him. He's pretty good with pressure, though, too, but you've got to try to do that, yeah.
Andy, do
Do you see similarities between Brian Dawkins and Rodney Harrison? They seem to be similar type players.
Yeah, they both love to play the game. They're both fun to watch. Don't take your head off if you come across the middle. They're tough guys, man. So, they're good football players, both of them.
It would also seem like, you guys can do a lot of things with Brian that they can do here with Rod. Maybe using him as like a pseudo linebacker, but he can still cover. I mean, how much flexibility does that give you when you have a safety that can fill all those roles?
I think it's important. And they do the same thing with Vrabel. They let him play on offense, and that's I think that's a good quality to have, and get the most out of the players there.
That Detroit game that you had in week three, 56-21, that was kind of like the type of game the Patriots are having almost every week here. How rare is that? I mean, putting the Patriots aside, it seemed like it's kind of rare to have a game offensively where everything works almost perfectly. What about that game was different than the rest of your season offensively?
Well, we've been up and down a little bit personnel-wise, just with people being healthy and people being injured. So, we kind of got everybody back there, and then we got a couple guys nicked up there. So, but everything clicked and it worked, and it was a nice game for us and that. But we're getting ourselves kind of back. Back moving here in the right direction, and we'll just, we'll see how we do it against the football team.
Thank you. Right. Appreciate the time.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Andy Reid, the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, just a short while ago at Gillette Stadium with members of the Patriots Media Corps. As we get ready here for hour number two of Patriots Playbook for Wednesday, my name is John Rook. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. That's how you reach us here. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll hear from Coach Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette, and also Tom Brady, whom you did not get a chance to hear during Patriots Monday this week because he wasn't able to make his appearance with Dennis and Callahan on WEEI. But we'll have him for you today in case you did not get a chance to hear Mr. Brady. So that is also upcoming here very, very shortly inside the playbook for today. Couple of other quick things as we kind of recap here at the top of the hour. Donovan McNabb not practicing today for the Eagles because of his ankle and thumb injuries. And ESPN.com today was reporting it is very much up in the air as to whether or not he will play on Sunday. McNabb's quote is, "You want to be smart, but you want to get out there and play." Doesn't really tell you anything, does it? McNabb, again, hurt his thumb early in that 17-7 win over Miami last Sunday. Left the game after he sprained his right ankle in the second quarter. And it was A.J. Feely who led the Eagles to their couple of touchdowns. And he's the one who will start if McNabb is not able to go. The ankle swelled up again yesterday. The ankle is apparently the one part that's actually a little bit worse than the thumb, but you got to be able to put some pressure on the ankle, and you got to be able to grip the football with a thumb. So right now I'd have to say it really doesn't look good, to say the least. And in case you weren't aware of it, this point spread is astronomical in this one. And, of course, it's just 3 short years after being separated by just 3 points in the Super Bowl. Philadelphia is right now a 23.5 point underdog. It's the largest point spread for an NFL game that does not involve an expansion team, according to all the odds makers in Las Vegas. The previous high was in 1976 on December the 5th. The then expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers were 24-point underdogs to the then defending Super Bowl champion Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Steelers covered, by the way, winning 42-0 in that game. So because of the parity in the NFL right now, and because of the free agency era leading to that parity, you just don't see too many spreads. In fact, you rarely ever see a spread over 2 touchdowns. You just don't. Teams take their starters out in the fourth quarter and save them for the next week, for the most part, if they're able to generate that kind of a lead. Sean Van Patten, who's the odds maker at sports consultant in Las Vegas, says, I call this phenomenon the Belichick factor. yeah, no kidding. By continuing to pour it on in the fourth quarter, Belichick is throwing Vegas out of whack and making bookies run for cover. There you go. The line for the Patriots-Eagles game was set at 17 points immediately after the Patriots-Bills game was over. And the big bettors, the sports syndicate guys, they jumped on it. They bet it hard, according to Brandon Lang, who is regarded as one of the nation's leading sports handicappers. And all the big money is taking the Patriots and giving the points, which is because, you know, they all believe that the Patriots are purposely running up the score. So the spread jumped all the way to 22 from 17 in just a matter of minutes after the Bills game was over on Sunday night. Wow. And now you add the fact that Donovan McNabb is injured and may not play at all, and then they're calling this the perfect storm of sports betting. That's why the spread is at 23.5 and could still be growing before Sunday night. Van Patten, by the way, says, well, McNabb himself is worth 4 more points. So if he does not go, that spread at kickoff could be 27.5. That's just astronomical. And, of course, they said if the overall record, which, again, is 24, as I mentioned, for that Buccaneers-Steelers game back in 1976. If the overall record is not set in this game, most sports odds makers believe that that record will be set or certainly threatened again in either of the Patriots games against the Jets on December the 16th or the Dolphins on December the 23rd. So, at any rate, just to kind of bring you up to date on those stories within the story that the Patriots are playing the Eagles this Sunday night on the Sunday night football game on NBC. interesting stuff to say the least, right? One other quick notice item that I want to have from the NFL today. Priest Holmes, running back from the Kansas City Chiefs, announcing his retirement. Just got through watching most of it here on NFL Network. Significant, not because Priest Holmes went to the University of Texas, although he did. Woohoo! But the fact is, here's a guy that is going to retire as the all-time leading rusher for undrafted players in NFL history. Think about that for a second. He's rushed for 8,172 yards in his 11-year career, which is pretty good. It's a good number. It's a very good number, very respectable number in his 11-year career, certainly with Kansas City and with Baltimore his first couple of years, if you'll recall. But 8,172 yards, primarily done over a span of about 8 seasons. So you can see the kind of impact that he's had, but he was an undrafted player. And that's more than, I believe, 2,000 yards better than the next nearest person in that category. So he had himself one whale of a career, especially for someone who wasn't even drafted and came into the league as a free agent. Pretty significant, I think. So I wanted to make mention of that because that's a fairly significant football move today around the league. Andy in Vermont emails back. He says that trivia question I gave you, John, was actually for Russell Baxter, who joined us yesterday, but he says the answers are special teams player won the MVP, Mark Moseley of the Washington Redskins in 1982 as a kicker. I think I remember that. And he said then the defense who set a record for 149 points allowed in a 14-game season, that was the 77 Arizona Cardinals, but the defensive coordinator of that team was Jerry Glanville. Now, I hadn't recalled that Jerry Glanville was actually the D coordinator of that 77 Arizona team. So, Andy, I appreciate your sending that forward to me. Glanville was a talented coach. I had spent quite a bit of time dealing with Jerry Glanville when he was the head coach of the Houston Oilers back in the mid-'80s and covered several of the training camps in San Angelo, Texas. And if you know anything about San Angelo, man alive, does it get hot there. I did a story for a television station covering that Oilers training camp where I fried an egg on the sidewalk. It was so hot, the egg fried. Stole one from the kitchen, or actually asked for one, took one from the kitchen, the training room that the Oilers used at Angelo State University, and fried an egg on the sidewalk. And we were editing the piece in the satellite truck that I was working in at the time, and Coach Glanville just happened to be walking by. And so I said, "Hi, Coach, how are you?" He said, "What are you guys working on?" And so I told him what we were working on. He said, "I'd like to see that." So we invited him into the satellite truck. He came on in where, of course, it was nice and air-conditioned, where few places were in San Angelo, Texas at the time. This was 1987. I believe this was summer training camp 1987. So this would have been, what, August of 87? Late July or early August of 1987. And brought him out of the satellite truck and showed him the piece that we did. You know, and it was basically a feature piece on the team and talking about defense. But it was also, you know, included about how hot it was in San Angelo. We did not have one day. We were there for 3 days. And we did not have one day where the temperature got under, during the daytime hours anywhere, the temperature got under 100 degrees. It was 100 plus each of the 3 days that we were there. So we were baking. I mean, it was just, you know, it was 105 in the shade. It was that kind of, you know, temperature. And he came in and cooled off, and we showed him the piece, and then, of course, showed him the egg that we fried, and it was a part of the video piece, and then I actually had the egg there. He couldn't believe it. I remember his incredulous, disbelief, if you will, that we could actually do that. And he says, well, guess that means I got to give him an extra water break. And which he did. But, you know, I always got along great with Jerry Glanville. I don't think he got enough credit for being a very good defensive coach, which he was. And your statistic and your trivia question there, Andy, will prove, no doubt. Alan in Montreal sends, John, I know you may have already talked about the Pats running up the score topic already, but Shannon Sharp said it best. We are in the NFL, and the defensive coordinator on the other side of the field gets paid millions of dollars to stop the Pats offense. So tell him to keep the score down, and I myself agree 100%. I think, and Alan, that's the general consensus. I think most fans, especially Patriots fans, think that, you know, it is the other team's job to stop the Patriots. It's the other team's defensive coordinator. It's his job to come up with a plan to at least slow the Patriots down, if not stop them altogether. So if they're trying to stop you, you're trying to score. How is it running up the score? I personally believe in this day and age, it's very difficult to really run up the score. I think it's hard to do that, because I think if you were deemed to be running up the score on someone, I think the personalities are such in this game nowadays where I think you definitely see guys taking pot shots at your superstars. And I'm a little surprised that nobody's done that yet with Brady, but I think it's largely because Brady is so well respected around the league. And I also believe that most of the players, there might be a straggler, one or two that don't think this way, but I think most of the players also realize that the Patriots are not running up the score. And it's kind of like, well, shame on us, we can't stop them. These players have pride. No one wants to think that they're just being bullied and, you know, and having the score run up on them. These players definitely have pride. And I also don't think that any one of them wants to be known as the one that took a shot and took somebody out. Because then you're going to be stuck with a real tag the rest of your career, and that can certainly backfire on you, especially if you're nearing free agency and you have a shot at getting a job someplace else. And who knows? I believe this also strongly, that New England now may be a destination point for a lot of players around the league who see the Patriots as the quintessential franchise right now, that they do it right, that they win, and that, you know, hey, when I get my chance to leave, I'm going to have my agent shot me to New England and see if I can win one too. I definitely think there's something to that. So I think most players, not all, but most players believe that the Patriots are not running up the score. That's just my own personal thought. Dave says, I think the score is going to be on Sunday 48-0. Like I said before, it's time for the defense to shine. I hated the Lakers growing up. I grew up in New Hampshire, and the Celtics were the best during the Bird years. I also hate the Yankees, obviously, 99-99. That was the last year they won the World Series, so I guess he's going to be chanting 1999. So I do understand, but I think it is turning more to awe now. That's A-W-E. At least near here, there isn't any hate. Yeah, I'd have to say that as this streak continues, Dave, that's probably a pretty good point, that I think most fans, most football fans, you know, you may really like your team where you are, but I don't know that it would be so much a hatred of the Patriots as it is being awestruck by what the Patriots are actually accomplishing. I mean, let's face it. Even the 72 Dolphins did have, you know, a pretty good year, but they didn't quite steamroll to the effect that the Patriots are steamrolling now. They did run up a few scores. We've talked about that 52-0 win that they had over New England. I think it was actually the next year. But a lot of people think the 73 team was actually better than that 72 team that went undefeated. But what the Patriots are doing now is just, it just kind of is like, wow, really? I got to have a look at this for myself. And so I think a lot of fans are kind of looking at it like that, to be honest with you. And I think as we get a little bit closer, I really believe this. I think you're going to find as we get closer to the eventual, you know, end of the season here, 6 weeks from now, and especially that Giants game when they have a chance to go 16-0, I think you're going to see more fans on the bandwagon. You're going to see more followers than haters. Because I do believe that fans are going to want to say, hey, you know, I want to remember a piece of history in the NFL, and I'd like to see them do this. They've gone this far. I'd like to see them get it. And I think that that's the majority. Not everyone, but I think that's the majority of football fan in this country. Football fan in this country appreciates the sport, has some knowledge of the history of the sport, can tell you two or three of the great teams of all time, can certainly tell you who he or she thinks is the greatest team of all time. But generally speaking, that team is probably going to be a team that they don't have a lot of recollection over, but they know it because they've read about it, or they've researched it, or they've had people, buddies, talk about it, or they've seen NFL films on it. But this Patriots team of 07, this is a team that they can kind of even call their own, even if they're not a fan of the Patriots, because they lived it, they watched it, they saw it, they'll remember the day that they saw the Patriots win a 16th game against zero defeats in the regular season. So I actually believe that there will be a certain faction of fans toward the end of the year that will say, you know what, good for them, I hope they do it. So I think you're going to see this, even though you may still feel a groundswell of anti-patriotism around the NFL, I think you're going to see it swing back a little, not a lot, but at least a little bit, if the Patriots are able to keep this up and then get to that Giants game ready to make some NFL history, potentially. We did have some Patriots history made this last week, and I can't believe so much has gone on, and of course the overall picture of it, the big picture story of it here is that it's just been kind of glossed over, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that a couple of things. Number one, Randy Moss setting the franchise single-season touchdown reception record with his 13th touchdown of the season. His first touchdown of the night, and that was that 43-yarder in the first quarter that gave the Pats a 14-0 lead. And then following that, he got three more. So his season total is now 16, and the record, previous record of 12 touchdowns in a single year, was blasted, which Stanley Morgan did way back in 1979. The 16 touchdown catches, by the way, that he now has, the third highest single-season total of his entire career, and it trails only the 17 that he had in 1998 and again in 2003. So who doesn't think that Randy Moss won't set a personal record for touchdown catches? He's certainly right there on the precipice of getting it. The other record that I think we have to mention as well that we've been remiss in mentioning here is that Brady set the franchise career touchdown pass mark with the 6-yarder that he threw to Moss in the second quarter. It was his third of the night. That became the 183rd touchdown pass of Tom Brady's career. And that passed Steve Grogan's franchise record of 182. For his career now, Brady has 185 total in 106 career games, 104 of those starts. Grogan had his 182 scoring passes in 149 career games. Think about that for a second. I mean, Grogan seemed he was around forever, right? And has a reputation and a well-deserved one of being one of the gutsiest, grittiest quarterbacks to have ever played the game, certainly in New England. 149 games, 182 career touchdowns. Good numbers. Tom has bested that 182 now with 185 in 43 less games. It absolutely puts an unbelievable spin on each man's career. Grogan's career was great. Brady's is phenomenal, I guess is really the best way to put it. Of course, the 38 now that he has for the single season here is a single season record.
besting Babe Parilli's record of 31 that he had back in 1964. So a couple of records there that I feel like, you know, we were just going to gloss over here because of the big picture that I felt like I needed to mention here because, frankly, we'd forget about it with everything else that's going on around here. All right, this, of course, being the day before Thanksgiving. Again, we won't have a show tomorrow because we'll be off of the Thanksgiving holiday with our family, and we hope that you and yours have a wonderful Thanksgiving wherever you may be partaking. We will be back, of course, with the playbook next Tuesday following the game against the Eagles on Sunday night and, of course, Patriots Monday programming here on Patriots.com radio on Monday, and then we'll have the our regular programming next week leading into the Monday night game the following week on the schedule. What we'd like to do for you now is give you a chance to hear Tom Brady, the aforementioned Tom Brady, because he was not a part of the Patriots Monday programming this week, but he did appear yesterday on WEEI. So we'll have that for you, as well as Patriots coach Bill Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium. So we'll let you hear Coach Belichick in his preparations and the team's preparations for the Eagles on Sunday night, and then we'll follow that up with Tom Brady and get his thoughts on not only the win over Buffalo, but getting ready for the Eagles on Sunday as the Patriots' quest for perfection continues. Here's Coach Belichick.
Well, we're you know, on to the Eagles today. You know, we've got a couple days after the late night Sunday to, you know, to get on Philadelphia. And, you know, as usual, they seem to be playing their best football this time of year, you know, in November and December, like they always do. You know, Andy, you know, I think does a terrific job. I think he's, you know, I have an awful lot of respect for him and the job that he does down there and the entire organization. You know, they've been a consistent winner for a number of years. And, you know, we've had some kind of played them on a regular basis there in preseason for a while. And I haven't seen them for a little bit, but they're you know, I have a lot of familiar faces, a lot of great players, a lot of some of the best players in the league that have been around for a while and know how to win. Certainly a veteran core there, and then they've supplemented that with you know, both some young players and some guys that have come onto the team recently. You know, like Spikes and Curtis, you know, guys like that that they've added onto the roster that continue to make them strong. So they definitely can run the ball. They can stop the run. Defensively, they're excellent in the red area and on the goal line, as they usually are. You know, they're usually right up there at the top of the league defensively, and they are in a number of categories. But the red area, of course, is outstanding. I think Jimmy Johnson does an outstanding job of knowing him for a long time. I have tremendous respect for what he does on the defensive side of the ball. They've got some very experienced players, and they also have a very good scheme. They're a hard team to get ready for, and, you know, we're going to need all the preparation time we can get to, you know, to handle what they do offensively. You know, of course, Andy runs the West Coast system. They've been running it for a long time. There's a lot of consistency and carry over there, and they certainly know what to do and how to handle different defensive schemes. They handle them well, and you know, again, they can run it and they can stop the run. And you know, it's a veteran, proven team, and I think that they. You know, they know how to win at this time of year. They've been doing it for a long time. So that's what we're looking forward to this week. We've got a lot of work to do, and you know, we'll need to be on top of things on Sunday night.
Bill, what's the greatest change in the Eagles from the last time you played, which was in the Super Bowl? So you had a lot of...
I don't think the scheme has changed a lot. They still kind of... They have a very extensive scheme. I don't mean to say that it's not that it's just very simplistic. That's not the case at all. It's very extensive, but it's still, you know, the same comprehensive scheme that they've had, and a lot of the key players are there: the McNabb, Westbrook, L.J. Smith, Trey Thomas, Runyon, and, you know, defensively Dawkins and Shepard and Sheldon Brown and, you know, guys like that. So, you know, Akers. There's a lot of players that are constants. They've got some new players that are in there, you know, one way or another, whether they be draft choices or whether they be, again, guys that they brought in like Curtis and Spikes and players like that. So, you know, I think it's a combination of the old and the new. The scheme's kind of what we've seen before, but there's some new players, and we'll have to be ready for them. So I guess that would be the biggest change. Certainly not the, you know, the two coordinators, in essence, Andy and Jimmy. That's been pretty consistent.
Bill,
Phil, I know that you've got their offensive scheme that they would normally use, but how different are they when you've got a Feely running it versus a McNabb running it, which you don't know what's going to happen this week?
Right. Well, you know, as always, we'll be ready for both of them. You know, Feely beat us down near Miami a couple of years ago, so, you know, we have a lot of respect for him and a lot of respect for McNabb. They're both outstanding quarterbacks. You know, they both can run the system. And, you know, when Feely got in there and ran it last week in Miami after McNabb went out, you know, he played very well. And so, you know, I think that they can keep it rolling no matter who's in there. They've again, it's such a well-oiled system, and they've had a lot of continuity. You know, they have a very experienced offensive line, very good offensive line, certainly one of the best offensive lines in the league. You know, so they can pretty much keep it rolling probably just about anybody in there. I mean, just like they did last year when, you know, they plugged in Garcia. So doesn't matter who the quarterback is, they seem to be able to move the ball pretty effectively. And I think that's a credit to not only the quarterback and the coaching, but, you know, the entire offensive unit.
Bill, Trent Cole is not really a household name, but he's done a good job getting the quarterback the last couple of years. What's his game?
Yeah, well, he does more than just get to the quarterback. He plays in very well. They're a very active front up there. He's got good quickness. You know, a little bit undersized for compared to some ends, but he's quick. He's active. He's very instinctive. You know, guys that overset him or don't get out there quite on top of him like they need to. If there's just a little bit of mistake there by the tackle or the tight end or whoever's standing there to block him, you know, he has the quickness and explosiveness to get on the edge and make it pay for it. But he has a lot of negative plays in the running game. He's a disruptive pass rusher. You know, Thomas, Curse on the other side, whoever it is, both of them, you know, I think Curse played very well early in the year. I know he hasn't been playing as much lately, but, you know, he's been productive for him this year. And, you know, Howard in passing situations comes inside. Bunkley's is an outstanding player. He's got a lot of power. So they play a lot of guys on the defensive front, and they're pretty good.
Bill, why is Westbrook such a difference maker in their offense?
No, he does everything well. You know, he's just an outstanding player. He's got great quickness. He's a hard guy to tackle out in space. He's very good on screen passes and out of the backfield. He's obviously got good hands. But he's a good inside runner. He's got good vision, good balance, and good speed. And, you know, just like in a Washington game, you know, he took a screen pass. You know, got a key block from Andrews and, you know, went 50, whatever it was, 50-some yards, and that's a difference in the game. So it doesn't take much with him. He's had great production in the return game for him, even though they haven't used him as much on that this year, but in the past. So he's very good in space. He's got good vision and good power in the inside running game. You know, he's leading the league in production from the line of scrimmage, and, you know, he does it in a lot of different ways. That's what makes him hard to defend. He's pretty good at everything. You know, Dawkins is, they're both good players. Dawkins is a real good player. You know, he's been very productive for the Eagles. I mean, you know, this kid that was drafted there and has played his whole career there, interceptions, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries. You know, good blitzer, good in the deep part of the field, good in man-to-man coverage, good in zone coverage, good down closer to the line. When he does play down there, even though with Considine and Michael and now even Reed, you know, he's been mainly the free safety, but there's plenty of times when he plays down close to the line of scrimmage. And I think he can do it all, and he's been very productive for him. So, you know, they use him to, again, they're a very complex defensive scheme. They have a lot of different schemes, and I'm sure he's a big part of getting that coordinated and you know, getting everybody on the same page and getting it executed. So, you know, he's an outstanding player. The corners are good, too. No, they got a lot of good players. I mean, they got Curtis, they got Brown, L.J. Smith, you know, must be averaging 50 receptions a year for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, they got a couple big receivers, Avant, Basket, those guys are, you know, big guys. Greg Lewis, you know, he's killed us before, so they got a good receiving core, they got good tight ends, they got good backs. Buckholder's come in there and given them a lot of production in the running back position when Westbrook was out. You know, he's a hard-nosed, tough guy that has a lot of positive plays, return kicks for him. So I think they're a well-balanced offense, and it starts on the offensive line. I mean, you know, you look at Thomas and Runyon, you know, I mean, those guys, seems like they've been there forever. And Andrews, he's, you know, he's the best guard we played against all year. He's, I mean, this guy's really good. You know, he's, you talk about go-to guys, you know, running backs and receivers and all that. Andrews is a go-to guy. You know, that you need yards, you run behind Andrews, you'll get them. I mean, this guy's really a good player. So, they're a well-balanced offense. It's no one-man band. And they got a good scheme, and they know what they're doing. You know, and he's a good coach, and he's, you know, he knows how to spread the ball around. He knows how to attack defenses, and you know they move the ball.
Bill, could you make a comparison to the player you coached in the past to Heath Evans in terms of the way he could one week be a lead blocker and maybe lock in on that role, and then the next week he might be running the ball, and you know, he's also fast enough to be able to uncover units. Anyone you've coached in the past that maybe had that?
Well, you know, I mean, Vardell was similar to that in Cleveland before he got hurt. You know, Vardell had a couple hundred-yard games and, you know, was good on special teams, caught the ball well, was a good runner. You know, and then he got hurt, so it was never quite the same after that. But, so, yeah, I mean, he's a versatile guy for us. You know, he can play on third down. He can play on early downs. He can play on fourth down.
Is that unique, or is that less unique now than it would have been in the past because that sort of traditional fullback like you talked about isn't really that prevalent in the league now to have, you know?
Yeah, well, he probably, you know, when I came into the league, you know, in the 70s and then even into the 80s, the fullback and halfback, the carries were kind of evenly balanced. You know, you had the Franco Harris and the Rocky Blyer. You know, you had fullbacks that carried the ball, Zonka and Kick, you know, all those combinations, Taylor and Horning. I mean, that was a little before that. But I'm just saying that there was a time when, before the I formation, you had some type of flatbacks, either, you know, away from the tight end to the tight end or splitbacks. And the carries were kind of equally split between those two positions. And a halfback's block for the fullbacks and a fullback's block for the halfback. So, you know, that's kind of what Heath is. Heath can block. Heath can carry the ball. He would be a natural fullback, you know, for the offenses of the 60s and the 70s. You know, when teams went to the I formation, then you really, in essence, you put a guard in the backfield and you gave the ball to one guy. So even though in I formation there's two backs back there, but it's really a one back set because the tailbacks get 90% of the carries, if not more. And then you got teams that decided, well, you know, like when Joe Gibbs went to Washington and the Coryell system and all that, they said, well, look, why put another basically lineman back there who's a big, you know, like Braxton and, you know, Maurice Carthon and guys like that who are just, you know, kind of pure fullbacks. Why put a fullback back there that's basically a guard in the backfield? You know, let's get another tight end or let's get a more, you know, what they call an H-back. Let's get a guy who's got a little more playmaking ability. So then those teams became true one-back teams and they didn't make any bones about it. We're not going to put a guard back there in the backfield. We're just going to go to a one-back set. And so that's kind of how the game has evolved, of course, to now where you watch college football and some teams don't have any backs in the backfield. You know, teams like Florida and all, it gets a quarterback back there. It's, you know, now you're back to almost like a single wing running game, you know, where your tailback's your quarterback. That's your runner. So it's just kind of how the game has evolved. But that's, you know, Heath's all a lot like the fullbacks from, you know, back in, like I said, the 70s, early 80s when I came into the league, and prior to that, of course, going back into the 60s.
Bill, you mentioned Florida. It's obvious more college people are going that spread from one night, the spread from just a quarterback in the backfield. Do you think that kind of offense will ever make its way to the NFL, or is that strictly a college offense?
I don't know. There's times in the NFL where you see just the quarterback in the backfield. There's situations like that. But, I mean, you watch the Pac-10. I mean, there's a lot of times games or you could watch the whole game and not see two backs in the backfield. You know, it's empty or it's a quarterback back there with a one other back and, you know, three, four, five extended receivers. You know, I mean, I don't follow college football that closely, but I watch it in the spring when you watch certain teams play, you're watching players and, you know, you watch the Pac-10, you watch the, whatever it is out there, the Big West or whatever that conference is. Those teams are in, I don't know if it's five receivers, but they got four or five guys spread out over the field, you know, the entire game. I mean, it's their goal line offense, too. So,
do you see it
we're like where they have Oregon has Dixon and Colgan with people where the quarterback actually runs the ball too? Did you see that in the NFL, or is that just too hard?
Well, I don't know. You know, you got with Sand, and it was, you know, and Vince Young. I mean, guy had a, I don't know how many yards he had rushing last year, but it was quite a few, you know, so. But, I mean, I think when you look at teams like Florida and Oregon, teams like that, that do that, their running game really then becomes, it's like the single wing. You know, when you ran the single wing, you didn't, you have an extra blocker. You know, you don't have a quarterback handing the ball off like you have in a T formation. So you got a guy carrying it, and there's no wasted guy, which is really what the quarterback is. He hands it off, and, you know, that's it. Whereas in a single wing or in those kind of offenses, you pick up an extra guy that they either have to cover or you pick up an extra blocker in the play because you're not having a quarterback hand the ball off. So that's, you know, I mean, it really, that's the essence of the single wing offense is, you know, everybody's a blocker and you got one ball carrier. You don't have any, you know, you don't lose the T formation quarterback.
So what's your schedule going to be like tomorrow on the
holiday? We'll go a little bit earlier, finish a little bit earlier. Yeah, well, no, we'll be done. Yeah, we'll be done a little bit earlier. We'll try to take what we do on a normal Thursday and you know, just push ahead a little bit, and then what we don't get, we'll add on Friday.
It's been a while since you've had a Thanksgiving office.
Well, you know, in the past, a lot of times we practiced on Tuesday and Wednesday, and giving the players off on Thursday, and we probably would have done that this week, but then when the game got moved to Sunday night, we didn't get back here till like 4 in the morning Sunday night. We just didn't feel like we had enough time to prepare as a staff, you know, for the players to come in on Tuesday. And plus it was kind of, you know, pushing it with them too. So, you know, we've done it both ways, but that's what we're on this week. So, you know, we're fine with that.
Okay.
I don't think I'm going to go hungry, though. That's what you're
going to.
I don't look like I'm undernourished, do I?
Some of the coaches with you or anyone with you or family?
Well, yeah, I think everybody is kind of. Family time does their own thing at Thanksgiving. Yeah, we'll be a part of that.
So Kelly Washington's snaps on offense have been really minimal. How has he adjusted to becoming more of a special teams specialist?
Well, you know, Kelly's always played in the kicking game. I thought he did a good job of that for Cincinnati. He's done a good job of that for us. And, you know, he's done a good job offensively when he's, you know, been called on to, you know, to play. You know, I think he unfortunately missed, you know, a little bit of time early in the season, training camp, and that, you know, let probably some other guys got a little bit ahead of him there, and you know, and they've done a good job. But, you know, I have a lot of confidence in Kelly. I think he can do whatever, you know, whatever we've asked him to do, he can do it. You know, we have other players that have been productive at that position too, tight ends and slot receivers and perimeter receivers. But I don't think there's any, you know, anything that he's been asked to do from a receiver standpoint that he, you know, hasn't shown he can do a good job of, whether it's play outside, play inside, block, you know, run after catch. And, you know, we saw him do a lot of those things in preseason. And, you know, he hasn't had as many opportunities to do that in a regular season as, you know, he hasn't had very many opportunities. But I have every confidence that he can do it if, you know, when he gets the opportunity to. And, you know, maybe it'll come soon. Okay. All right. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.